Hello and welcome back to the Trouble AA podcast. Not leading off. It's the other one, the lineup.
The lineup.
There you go. I'm gonna get used to this.
To be fair, we didn't have a lineup last week. So
yeah, see that's I'm leading off again to start the True Blue. To me, it'll always be the singular True Blue LA podcast. So
we have it's the OG, it's the original. It's like
Tommy's. Tommy's the original. You'll think about that. You took last week off, so we took last week off.
I had ringworm. That's my excuse. I'm
sticking to it. It was a good week to take off. I got to go to a couple of Dodger games via Kauffman Field. Is it Field or Stadium?
Stadium.
Yeah. That's what I was to say, and then Field sounded so much better. I went to two of the three games, decided not to go to the Sunday game because it was in the afternoon, and I picked the right one. So that was a lot. I had a lot of fun. Got to go with my daughter for one of the games. Good times had by all. Less good times in Dodger pitching news, and we're going to cover that and kind of what the lead up to October on the pitching side looks like this week. We may or may not have questions of Craig. If we do, we'll have them live. Otherwise, that'll be a shorter episode. You know what I mean?
That's right.
And more time, we'll just play more commercials instead. Make more money that way. It's like the Super Bowl. It's what you look forward to anyways.
That's true. I'm sure I can only imagine. We don't know exactly what ad's going to come up now. I'm imagining it's like Brad Pitt and Matt Damon in the same ad somehow. And hopefully not for NFTs. But anyway,
So we're going to take a little break and we'll be back with that after this.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Eric, I have breaking news. Pulling the curtain back a little bit. Craig sends me the answers to the trivia portion of Questions for Craig before he sends the whole questions. I, 12 minutes ago, got the answers to the trivia question. So, assuming you and I can stall long enough, we'll have questions. So, I was worried. We were both worried that we wouldn't get to have questions for Craig this week. Fear not.
I love it. Yay.
Who should be afraid is the Dodgers? Not really. They're still it's a weird week for. I'm glad one of the nice things about you starting the leading off podcast instead of us having the is we're free to kind of be a little more focused on the long term podcast. This one, and we don't have to, we're not forced into the summation game every single week, especially on weeks where there's like a weird dichotomy juxtaposition of news. Like on one hand, Walker Buehler is out for the year. The Dodgers don't have a definitive ace. That'd be a fun little skit. Just the beat writer that doesn't know anything about the team. I'm thinking of the jokes there. And, but on the other side, the Dodgers have just been crushing it the last, month or so? Month and a half?
Yeah, it is weird. But then at the same time, like, there's also a world where by the time this podcast goes live on the site, they might have lost 4 or 5.
Yeah.
So at the same time, like, having, like, an incredible, like, 50-game run or whatever. But yeah, it's wild. Yeah, I don't know. The Buehler thing, I don't want to say it wasn't expected for sure, right? Like,
wasn't shocking.
Right. He was in that, like, he's going to be back in September. And, you know, the plan was for him to build up to October, but nobody really knew exactly when he was going to be back in September. So he was always, and it was always very much contingent on how he, you know, how his throwing was going and all this sort of stuff. And I guess he had, you know, still some pain or soreness, I guess, in his elbow area. And so they shut him down and then they did an MRI. And it's also weird. Like, so he's having elbow surgery next. They announced this Monday, the 15th, that he's having elbow surgery on Tuesday.
They were very specific. 23rd. Elbowitis, elbow section. they weren't right. Specific. We have. We've seen ectomy. This before, where it's probably we don't know what we're doing yet. We have to kind of go in and figure it out. But then we're not going to bother coming back. You know, bringing him out and figuring out what to do. We're just going to do whatever we think is best.
The cynical side is always they're hiding something.
Right.
Right. Like, but at the same time, you know, like I'm sure we'll find out at some point. I you know, after the season, maybe, like, depending on how secretive they are or whatever. But, like, so we know he's out for this season, right? The question now becomes, how far into next season is he out, if at all? Like, because the way the sort of, I guess, story broke, so the Dodgers, like, put out an actual, like, press release saying he's going to get surgery on the 23rd, and then Dave Roberts, the Dodgers are in Milwaukee, and before the game, you know, Roberts is always the front man. He has to answer the questions on all these because not everyone's available all the time for, like, that sort of stuff. So he's always out front and has to sort of toe the company line or whatever on this. And he was, you know, basically said, Dr. Alatrash, you know, saw enough on the MRI knowing they have to do surgery. They're going to figure out exactly what once they go in. That's, like, red flag number one. You're like, okay, like, that's like, I'm no, obviously, neither of us are doctors. Wait, we didn't record last week. Did you get a doctorate?
I have not received my doctorate in the mail yet, but I paid for one. No, I haven't. It's a lie.
So yeah, like, that's like, you know, there's enough uncertainty there where you're like, okay. And then the concern with Buehler, right? He had Tommy John coming out of college. Is it Tommy John? Now it seems to be, I don't know. It's hard to say that it's not, you know, but they at least the reports are that it doesn't seem to be that. The one, I don't know if there's a saving grace here, but his injury in June was flexor tendon strain. So that's not the ligament, which is what the Tommy John repairs. Then he also had arthroscopic surgery to clean out bone spurs in his elbow. So presumably they're going to go in and do something to the flexor tendon. That's like the thought, right? But then you don't know, like, how long that's going to keep him out. Like, we'll talk about in a little later some of the sort of pitchers who are, like, sort of making their way back. But Danny Duffy last year, Dodgers traded for him in July, was hurt, didn't come back, ended up not pitching. Had flexor tendon surgery in November. His goal was to be back by this June. It turns out he's not back yet, and it sounds like Dave Roberts said the other day he had a setback, so he's probably out for this year. And, you know, he has an option for next year that I would almost guarantee won't be picked up. Even taking the low end of Duffy's thing, and it's not fair. Duffy's like 10 years older, much more wear and tear on his arm. Different, everyone's different, right? But like, Bueller's at like 2.5 months earlier in the process in terms of when he's getting the surgery, and we don't even know if it's the same surgery. I'm just spitballing here. But even that, so you, even something like that puts Bueller out until like mid-April or maybe May, right? So that's concerning. So like, but then, and but we don't know. Like, if it is Tommy John, he's out for next year too. That sucks, like, obviously. But I guess we just don't, there's so much unknown. That's the scary part, I guess. But like, I don't know, in terms of, you're right, like the juxtaposition part, right? In terms of this season, again, it would have been great. He's their ace. He's their opening day starter. He's started so many game ones recently. Would have been great to have Bueller back. But like the timing of that news came like roughly the same time where officially now Dustin May is starting this Saturday for the Dodgers. So like he's back from Tommy John surgery. He's looked great on his rehab assignment. So not that it's a one-to-one replacement, but stuff-wise, it is. Like, you know, in excitement-wise, in hair, where the Dodgers are gaining very much in this. So like, it's this weird, like, excitement on one hand, but then, like, oh, it's a real bummer for Bueller, you know? Like, I don't know. This whole season is so weird. Like you said, they're playing so well, but there is so much uncertainty. Like, their pitching staff, like, numbers-wise, is historic, like how they're prevented runs. But then you look, it's like, and then you kind of look like, who's starting in October? You don't really know. Like, so there's a lot of, like, weird question marks. I don't know. Did you happen to, not that you went to games or anything, but were you following along sort of Dustin May's, like, rehab assignments and all that kind of stuff?
Just from sort of a reputation standpoint, that they were going very well.
Yeah. So the good thing about AAA, you know, if you're from afar, those games are also on StatCast, so you can get into some of the numbers. I know I try not to be a slave to, like, velocity and all that kind of stuff, but you could check, because for some people it's relevant. Like, you know, if they're coming back from injury, like if they're like 5 miles an hour off, you know, something's a little off, right? So, but he was like hitting 99 the other day. On Sunday was his last game with AAA. He struck out 10 in 5 innings, and he's like, yeah, doing just kind of looking kind of like he was right before he got hurt. So that's really good. I guess the other, we talked about uncertainty, right? Then there's also like the looming, like, Clayton Kershaw question. He's been, had an epidural in his back August 5th. Then last weekend when Dodgers were in Kansas City, he told Bill Plunkett, this is the quote from Kershaw, "Look, at the end of the day, I know what I need to do to get ready for October. I definitely feel I'll have enough time to accomplish all of that." So he's in the sort of Bueller zone of coming back in September, building up for October, but with the caveat that he hasn't missed as much time. He's also older, but like, I don't know. It's just weird. So like, you just don't know what you're getting out of him, right? So he's like if they have him, Kershaw's like the game two starter. Like, I don't know. Like, for me, I sort of just jotted down like where the Dodgers starters like stack up right now. Like, for me, I don't know how it's going to play out. Obviously things could change over the last like 7 weeks of the season, but like Julio Urias is pretty clearly the number one for me right now. Mm-hmm, like just how they sort of look to him and all that. I'm not discounting like Tony Gonsolin and wow, I can't. Tyler Anderson, I couldn't remember his first name. That is sad. I'm not discounting the guy. I don't know his name. That is terrible. That, write out names in your stupid notes, Eric. That's my advice to myself. But yeah, so they've been solid, right? You can't take away from anything. So what to watch for Gonsolin is he's coming up on like his career high in innings, if you count both majors and minors, from like 4 years ago. So how he sort of responds to that. Anderson, I don't think there's much of a risk. He's generally been durable enough to like get through seasons and things, so that's not a big deal. But like, you know, where do you slot them in? I think Gonsolin right now is probably easily number two, but right. Then then you have like Dustin May and Andrew Heaney separately are in the awesome when healthy, but how much can they go? Like, you know, is May going to be stretched out to be like a starter, or is he going to be short burst guy like in 2020, maybe in a more like a bigger sense than that? I don't know. But and then if Kershaw's healthy, will you slide him? So there's a lot of question marks still to sort of decide. But they do have like 7 weeks to sort of decide it. So yeah, I don't know. Like that's sort of where we're at. As a side note to this, so I expected. So Ryan Pepiot, he made his sixth start for the Dodgers on Tuesday. I expected them to send him down for an extra reliever until Saturday when May is going up, but they didn't do that. Dave Roberts on Wednesday said they are going to stick with Pepiot in the rotation at least one more time through to do a six-man rotation just to give everyone extra rest. Again, that's sort of where they're at. Like, you know, it's huge lead, almost guaranteed to have a bye into the division series. So, yeah, that's how they're going to sort of play that. But, yeah, it's just there's a surprising amount of question marks. And we haven't even got to the bullpen yet. But, hey, let's talk about that. There's bullpen stuff. There's actually some news. We're recording this on Wednesday. Some decent amount of news from this group, like today. Bruiser Gradall, he's pitched twice for Oklahoma City. He has shoulder inflammation. He's supposed to pitch Wednesday and Thursday on back-to-back and then probably be activated this weekend. I would imagine not sooner than Saturday. Blake Treinen is more of a longer term. He's been out since April. He's also pitched twice for AAA. Like last homestand, I think there was a clip of Treinen saying like, now he just has to build up stamina. Like his velocity was down the other day, but like I said, you're not necessarily watching it with him. It's more like how he's sort of feels afterward, and he needs to sort of be able to go back to back and things like that. And I think he's probably a few weeks off from that. And Dave Roberts on Wednesday said Sportsnet LA showed this, said we don't expect him back the first week of September anyway. So he's more of like, if he's ready by like mid September, that's probably enough to get enough reps in to be ready for the playoffs. And then so we'll see. Yency Almonte is more of a shorter term thing. He had an MRI on elbow tightness, came back quote unquote clean. He's throwing. He's supposed to throw off a mound once the Dodgers get back home. That's this weekend. So he can't be activated till next week anyway. So should be sometime around then. The other news is Victor Gonzalez exists. He made his season debut on Tuesday. He pitched in the Arizona Complex League. He had elbow surgery in April, I want to say. And that was arthroscopic as well. But like he's pitching is a sign, but doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be ready, but at least he's sort of in that group. Danny Duffy, aforementioned, had the setback, so he's pretty much out. Tommy Canley, haven't heard an update from him about him recently, but at the end of July, Dave Roberts mentioned him as sort of 50-50 to return this season. I would probably bet against that, just given, you know, just sort of being conservative. Yeah, I don't know. And then Dellin Betances, who was among the sort of group of veteran relievers on a minor league deal, he had his velocity is way down. 10.26 ERA in 19 games is kind of rough. He had shoulder surgery last year. He's been hurt for like 4 years. He was shown as released on the transaction log, I think today. And then John Heyman reported earlier Wednesday that Betances retired. He was a dominant reliever with the Yankees, and it just sucks that he wasn't able to sort of get back to that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, but so again, 7 weeks to sort of figure this out. And that's before we figure out who's going to be available. The Dodgers also have to figure out what the hell do they do with Craig Kimbrel, right? Like we've sort of joked about this. I don't remember the number of clean innings. I think it's either 7 or 8 in like 44 games. It's been wild. Like he's just been, I don't know, just not very good. Like, so on Tuesday, it sort of came to a head. It's the fourth time this season he's been asked to protect a one-run lead. It was in the 10th, or no, the 11th, excuse me. And it was his fourth blown save in those situations. To be fair, two of those are extra innings, although he would have blown the save yesterday anyway without the extra runner.
Right.
because he did allow two runs.
Although, I mean, I do kind of hate to say that just because, like, how differently do you pitch with someone on second?
Exactly. So. And is Hunter Renfro bunting?
Yeah.
Right? Like, to start the, like, but yeah, no, you're right. But so, all caveats there. But so, the one thing that stood out, aside from Kimbrel, like, not doing well in those situations, it's not like he's done well in other situations, right? Although those are his only blown saves. However, he has like a 4.57 ERA. His peripherals are better, like 3.53 xERA and 2.48 FIP. He's not a 2.48 pitcher right now, like even with his stuff, right? But what stood out is that he's only had 4 1-run save opportunities for an 80 win team. And like I was looking at, so there's 12 pitchers with 20 saves entering Wednesday. Like all of them have more save opportunities than Kimbrel. The number one guy, Jordan Romano on the Blue Jays, had 17 such chances. And Kimbrel, like, his ERA in those games, it's 2 2/3 innings, 16.88. The only person who had, like, close to Kimbrel in few chances, Kenley Jansen, and he blew 3 of the 5. So, like, you know, it's just what a weird thing this is. I guess his peripherals are, you know, still good, like I said. He just doesn't seem to know where the ball is going, or can control it, and that's been the problem. Now, people were out for blood after Tuesday, as you might imagine. Obviously, Dave Roberts post-game is not going to come out and say, "Yep, he sucked. He's done." Right? Like, he's never ever going to say that. Like, no matter what. But you know, that's the sort of thing where, first of all, post-game is like the worst time for like most things. You're gonna get like their heat of the moment stuff. So you're if you're looking for like specific, it's the worst time to go for like injury diagnosis unless they literally just have like a specific thing, because it's mostly guesswork and there's so much going on. Like, but also you're never gonna get like an impulsive thing after the game like that. So it's obviously gonna be something handled in private. That's what Roberts like excels at. That's one of his strengths. They're going to, like, in fact, earlier today on Wednesday, Robert sort of expanded on that. And he's like, look, we're going to, you know, work with him and think of all this. But then he also said, like, which is what he said with Kenley Jansen as well in the last few years. When it comes September, the best players will play. And that's just how it goes. So, like, you know, obviously not a gauntlet that he's throwing out there. But I think his actions the last few years have made it clear that if it's not working, he will turn away from the iconic closer if he has to. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's that's just sort of where they're at. We've seen this with Kenley Jansen. But, yeah, I don't know. But I think it's all about the other options that are available. Like, if you get Gratterall, Trinan, Almonte back, plus Evan Phillips, those four can all close games if needed. And it's a lot easier to, like, move away from solely Kimbrel closing games if you have all those guys. So, like, that's, I don't know, that's sort of where it's at. What, you have any thoughts on Kimbrel, I guess?
What's interesting is I watched the Dave Roberts interview yesterday about it, and he was very, thought he was a good outing, and it just didn't go well. I actually thought yesterday, which, you know, very consequential outing, he looked fine, I thought. Now there have been many non-1-run saves recently where I felt like he hasn't looked fine. Like, just the ball is, he's always going to be a little nibbly just because trying to get the stuff there, but has just looked like too many non-competitive pitches where just like no one was going to swing at that. And so that's half the time you're just limiting yourself for how often you can be effective. But yeah, I thought last time it was actually like just kind of, and we went through this with Kenley as well, where he would trade off effective outing, good result, effective outing, bad result, and then just a bad result. And being able to kind of pin it was difficult. Now, that said, you know, you do need, there have been plenty of relievers in that bullpen who have been better. And if they have access to them, they should be using them in the highest leverage spots, which, yes, will often be a save, but often won't be. Right. So I would not be surprised if this turns into similar to last year, where Kenley got a decent amount of the nominal saves, but you saw Trinan and Urias in some of the high leverage spots. And we might see that again with, you know, maybe Trinan, but certainly with
Phillips.
With Phillips and maybe Almonte.
And Gratterall, yeah.
Sure. Although Gratterall has been sort of similar in that.
He's always, yeah. Always, but at least, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Hundred will play kind of no matter what. But even then, he also has had some outings where that have looked Kimbrel-esque, shall we say.
The one thing Roberts did say, you know, with a day's sort of time to think about it on Wednesday was, he said he thought Kimbrel at times was going for the strikeout too much. And he's like, I just want outs, like, however you can get them. So I know it's not that easy, right? But, like, I sort of get what he's saying, like, maybe – like you mentioned, like stop nibbling or whatever, and just, you know, let your stuff do this work, I guess. But about those blown saves for Kimbrel, so 4 blown saves on the season, all of them in one run opportunities. But regardless of one run, two run, three run, or whatever, since saves became an official stat in 1969. Who holds the Dodgers record for most blown saves in a season?
I wasn't expecting the trivia question this early. I mean, we're totally where our normal stopping stop is, but I was ready to talk more pitching and stall longer so I could think of saves leaders or blown saves leaders, I guess. Yeah, I'll think about that. We've got a break. We've got a lovely commercial that I can think of the answer. Our listeners can go get a drink and think of the answer, and we'll be back after this.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You had to go get a glass of water, and so I had an extended amount of time to think of this trivia answer, and I didn't. saves leader.
My one hint to you is if you think of like Dodgers reliever and quantity, that's where your head should be at.
Kenley?
No. And this is a single season.
You set that, like, if you give me that hint and
single season.
Gagne?
Nope.
Well, your hint actually ruined most of my guesses. So I'm
looking here. So Kenley Jansen's high was 8 blown saves in 2019. He's 4 behind the leader. Gagne is not, turns out he was pretty good.
yeah, right. That's what Gagne's, I was like.
Gagne's most blown saves was 4 in 2020.
Mike Marshall, the pitcher.
Yep.
Hey, look at that.
you figure when you pitch in 106 games, you're bound to blow saves. 208 in a third innings. He blew 12 saves. He saved 21. He was 15-12. Won the Cy Young, first reliever to do so. But yeah, so I don't know. It's not that revelatory. I tried to go, not that it was a softball question, but it was a simpler question.
You never did, but I had the, like, this is a, you know, my era pitcher.
No.
And so I had kind of had that in my head, but when my
I was going to say Jacob era, but then, and thinking, so let's just say
I was
Jacob
alive,
era.
I guess.
No, I want to say, you know, because 74 for pitcher Mike Marshall, so you weren't.
Oh, okay.
So in the Jacob era, which, and I will define it even more narrowly and just say in the 2000s.
Uh-huh.
So much more cognizant Jacob era. Who do you think is number one?
And it's not Kenley. 8.
It's Kenley's not Kenley. 8. Kenley had 8. Someone has 9.
I have 2 guesses then. What about, how many, no, I won't ask for an additional hint. Yency Brazelman.
Oh, good. He had six. Okay. See, I think they pulled him to.
Yeah, like, that. Yeah. Okay. Broxton.
No. So Broxton's high was eight. He had also two seasons with six and a seven.
Okay.
So there was some tight ropes in there. Yeah.
No, I'm tapping up.
Jeff Shaw in 2001 had nine. Okay. So the one I wanted to bring up, though, was right behind Mike Marshall, like Iron Man reliever in 74, was Scott Radinsky, 1998.
He
11.
That was a name that was gonna, like, if, yeah. I don't know if I would have gotten there, but that probably would have been the next name on my list.
If he was the actual answer, I would have said, like, which former band member, like, yeah, you know, or something like that. I can't remember the name of his band. But no, so he saved 13 games, and I was looking at this because I think of Scott Radinsky as, like, not a loogie, but like a middle reliever type, you know? Mm-hmm. And actually, am I conflating him? Was he left-handed? He was left-handed. Okay. That would suck if he wasn't. Because for a second, my brain went, is that Mark Guthrie? But no. So I looked, and, like, I figured, because a lot of times the blown saves are like guys in the seventh inning, you know, blowing a lead, and it's not really a save, but they only get a blown save because they gave up the lead. They were never going to actually save the game.
Right.
But I think only one of his, he entered in the seventh, and it was like a multi-inning thing anyway. So they're mostly legit. It was all like eighth and ninth. So, like, he was just pitching high leverage. That was a weird year, 1998, like such a turnover year. So they... Yeah, he was pitching in, like, every possible, like, pressure situation, it sounds like, for the Dodgers that year. He had a 2.63 ERA. He was good. Like, but, yeah, weird.
Well, I have good news. The questions came in, so it's time for...
Questions from Craig.
Of these five questions from Craig, the first one, as it has been.
Before we start, I forgot to do this before we went to break, but shout out to David Vesse, Dodger Talk host on AM 570, but also occasional reporter for Sportsnet LA, which he's doing this series. He decided to go down the slide formerly Miller Park. I think it's Family Field now.
It's Miller Park. I don't care what they say.
So he wanted to go down the slide that Bernie Brewer goes down, and, like, they showed video of it, and it's hilarious, and it's we can laugh at it now because he's reasonably okay. But he broke his wrist and, like, multiple ribs. They showed, he's getting all sorts of props, and deservedly so, for being a gamer, because before he went to the hospital, he did a pregame interview with Justin Turner in the dugout, and they showed it on Sportsnet LA, and he's, like, barely holding his, like, arm, you know, to the side, and then, and Turner was sort of good-naturedly ribboning him, he's like, but he's also like, I don't know why you're here, you should be at the hospital, and all this, but then... As we were recording, they showed the Vesse thing. Like, the thing they don't tell you about that slide, you go down in, like, this, like, a burlap sack or, like, on top of one, so to, like, grease it a little bit. But then at the end of the slide, there's, like, no room, and you go right into a wall. Like, and he was not prepared for that and just slammed into it. And, but he's, like, on the game right now, back from the hospital, like, you know, it's not sideline reporting, but he's there, like, reporting from the game. So props to Vesse. He toughed it out. Good for him.
You ready now? You done stalling? You probably read the questions and you've been thinking of answers, and you've got to think of things to plug in. I get it.
I've been good at, like, I'm very good at copying without reading. Like, because I just copied it to get into our notes or whatever. So, yeah. Yeah.
All right. The Miami Marlins began play in 1993. True or false?
I'm going to go true.
That's it. That was the only... No, this weekend the Dodgers will host them at Dodger Stadium. So here are some questions about Dodger leaders against the Marlins. Seven Dodgers have hit eight or more home runs against the Florida-Miami National League franchise. Can Eric name these long-distance fishermen?
Nice. Beautifully worded question, Craig. Seven more with eight. So let's go with the volume, guys. So let's go Eric Karros first.
With 10 home runs, number two on the list.
Let's also go with Mike Piazza.
Not on the list.
That's why they traded him. Like, you can't hit against the Marlins. We're sending you there. So that was the only reason. Okay, and then let's go with Justin Turner.
Missed the cut with seven.
So the problem is, like, now they only play him twice a year. So, but let's go back. Let's go back to that era. Sean Green,
Third on the list with nine.
And then it's only. Ugh. What about Adrian Beltre?
Eight. Tied for sixth.
Okay. And then Matt Kemp.
Not even seven home runs, but not on my list at all. Not even near the cutoff.
Andre Ethier?
Tied with Adrian Beltre for six.
With eight. Oh, okay. And then, what do I need, like two more?
You need three by my count.
Okay. Cody Bellinger?
Six. He had six. So you are missing someone you are missing both. Tied for thirds, who each have nine, and then you're missing the leader with 11 home runs.
11.
I have years if you want them.
I'll take it. The scoundrel's way out.
Okay. Sure. The leader played from 93 to 99.
Oh, so that's Mondesi.
With 11. And then the tied, 98 to 01. Speaking of Florida.
Sheffield. Yep. Yeah.
And then.
I forgot to guess him after Green.
13 to 18
is Yasiel Puig.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Five Dodgers are tied with three triples against the Marlins. Who are these multi-leader three backers?
Oh, God. Dodgers. Chris Taylor.
Chris Taylor only has two.
Well, it's time to pick it up. We should wait to release this till Chris. They play him twice in the next two weekends. Like. Let's just wait to release it until he hits another triple so I could be right. Okay, so triples. I don't think he played enough. So let's just go Brett Butler. I'm just trying to.
Only two.
Yeah.
Two of these I would think you could get pretty quickly. The others, you're just throwing names against the wall.
Generally. Yeah, I'm just having a hard time visualizing it. The triples is like throwing me off. So I will go. Let's just say D. Gordon.
I think that's a good guess, but no.
All right, I'm gonna guess one more, and just because he had all the home runs. Let's just say Raul Mondesi.
Raul Mondesi is one. Three.
Oh.
You want to keep going until you miss?
Yeah. Let's also say I'm gonna go wild card as my last guess because that's probably gonna be wrong, but Dave Roberts.
not there. You have Delano DeShields. You knew they got him for a reason, is to hit triples against the Marlins.
I guess. You know what? I'm going to give that.
Fair trade.
You're right. You're right. Should have known.
Rafael Furcal, which was the name I thought you might get to.
I was thinking about that, and I don't know why. I should have pulled the trigger on that, actually.
James Loney?
Come on.
Yeah.
three of his seven career triples or whatever.
Jose Offerman.
Nice. All right.
Seven players have struck out between 66 and 31 times. That's weird to go in that order, but I get it. against the Marlins. Who are these Dodgers who left empty-handed on those plate appearances?
Come on. All right. going with the longevity here. So, Karros?
Leads the pack. Ooh, sorry, with 66 strikeouts.
Raul Mondesi?
Didn't make, no, it did make the cut. Sorry, I could, it was figuring out the cutoff. 65, they're in 65 games, he struck out 32 times. There we go. I got there.
Nice. Matt Kemp.
Second on the list with 48 strikeouts in 48 games.
Chris Taylor.
Strike one.
pretty happy to do that. Let's see, 5 seasons, 30. I don't think he did. Let's go Mike Piazza.
Third on the list with 51.
So what do I need? 2, 4, 3?
I don't know. 4? You got Karis, Kemp, and Piazza, is that right?
I thought I got one more.
Oh, did you get Mondesi? You did get Mondesi. So you need 3.
Okay. Sean Green.
Strike 2.
Cody Bellinger.
Strike 3. You missed Andre Ethier with 35 strikeouts. Adrian Gonzalez with 32.
Wow. All right.
And Todd Hollinsworth with 31.
Nice. Okay. All right.
On the mound, 7 pitchers have accrued between 113 and 41 strikeouts against the Marlins. Can Eric name these Dodger pitchers?
All right. So Clayton Kershaw.
Which you believe leads the pack with 113.
I would have guessed. Let's go with, you know what? I'm let's go Chad Billingsley.
49 strikeouts.
Ramon Martinez.
53 strikeouts.
Hideo Nomo.
Second place with 98 strikeouts.
Brad Penny.
You're going for the revenge factor, but no, not on the list. Strike one.
I thought he had a 14 strikeout game against the Marlins.
I really wish. I'm going to side note. I really wish Craig had extended this to one more place with 38 strikeouts. So if you guess the 38 strikeout player, I'll give it to you.
So, I guess I didn't think about this. So 10 years. 3 saves. I'm gonna go a little bit off board and say Kenley.
Kenley with 36 strikeouts.
All right. Okay, so let me think here. Let's go back to Walker Buehler?
Walker Buehler, no. Only 35 strikeouts.
All right. I think my brain might have shut off. I don't know the rest.
All right. So Chan Ho Park had 52. Kevin Brown should have gone with another revenge factor.
Yeah,
49.
Yeah.
Tom Candiotti with 42.
Nice. All
right. Darren Dreyfuss with 41. And then just next on the list, Eric Gagne with 38.
And he wore 38.
Yeah. Isn't he nice? Well, there you go. You did okay.
Yeah.
You've done better. But I'm still proud of you. How about that?
What? Thank you.
Dave Roberts values loyalty, and he demonstrates it in various ways. Now, the Dodgers have a large lead and really, as Eric found out, have not had a lot of tight games. But how much longer should Craig Kimbrell be the closer this season without some sign of improvement?
I will note that Craig did not see or was consulted on our notes before this, although he had to know we were going to talk about
it. And whose fault is that?
Yeah.
He could have offered.
It's completely my fault. Yep.
Not yours. Craig's fault. Should have offered.
It's totally Craig's fault. Yep. Shame on Craig. Jeez. No. It's one of those things where he's like, he has to work stuff out. But like, if he continues to pitch, like, you know, like you said, the last night it was a bloop hit, right? that won the game. So I sort of get it. But like, if he keeps blowing saves, like, and just pitching for you, you can't keep throwing him out there. Like, you at some point you have to getting him to like work back into it involves pitching in extremely low leverage at some point, like if it gets bad enough. I don't think they're there yet, but it's not that far off. Like, you know, like 2 more bad games, I would say, in a reasonably short amount of time, and then you just sort of take him out of that role for a little bit, and then just sort of work him back somehow. But like, I don't, like I said, I don't think they're going to make the move just yet. But like, we're recording this on Wednesday. Like, if he pitches like tonight or tomorrow and his first, next game out and he blows a save, they'll probably like give him a rest. Oh, that's the one thing I didn't mention before. One of the things Roberts will do, right? They'll talk to Kimbrel behind closed doors. They'll make the plan or whatever. And then he'll say like, we're doing a reset or something. That's exactly what he's saying with Cody Bellinger. Like they sat him, Tuesday, Wednesday. Who knows? He might not play Thursday. Who knows? But like, they're basically like having him work on stuff right now because he's slumping. It's just sort of that's just sort of how they'll do it. But they're not going to be like, nope, he's not our closer anymore. He's done. You know. But it's more like he's going to work on some things, and they'll couch it in as kind terms as possible, I guess.
Three position players, Justin Turner, Austin Barnes, and Joey Gallo, have not collected a triple this year in a Dodger uniform.
Yet. Oh.
Of those three, Justin Turner is likely to play the most. So for the contest, I'll give one of you Turner, and the other one will get the field, which will include any other players called up or acquired. Eric, you pick first. Boo.
So I either get...
Yeah, I'm not happy with this question at all.
For everybody else. Oh, God. I almost feel bad doing this, but you know what? I'm taking the field.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone's seen Justin Turner run this year. It's not been the most... Did you see that send?
When?
It was a sacrifice fly, I think.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I've been really, a third base coach is generally doing the job if you don't really notice mistakes. So, and yeah. I generally think Ebel's done a really good job of that. But that send was egregious.
Yeah. I saw someone refer to that as, like, it was really hot. They wanted to get back into the day.
Yeah.
they had already scored five in the inning, the first inning. So, like, but yeah. No. But yeah, you know what? I'm taking. I don't even know if I'm going to include that in our list of bets because that's egregious. But like, sorry.
All right, whatever. Maybe we misunderstood the question.
Anyways. Sure.
Eric, it is getting close to that time of year again. Can you explain if there is a playoff eligibility date anymore? And also, can you play a little roster guessing with how the Dodgers manage some of the 60-day additions this season?
Okay, so the rule is to be playoff eligible, you just have to be in the organization before September 1st. You don't have to be on the 40-man by then, but you just have anywhere in the organization. So any minor leaguer at the end of the day on August 31st in the system is eligible. Now, the one thing is if you can't, like, have I can't envision a scenario where there's going to be that many of those guys, but, like, it's not something you can necessarily game. Like, you can't necessarily... It's not really feasible for someone to have like five of those type of players or 10 or something like crazy. And why would you? You wouldn't be that good of a team if that's what your roster was. But just as a hypothetical. So you do have to be on the 40-man roster to play in the postseason. So at some point you have to get added. Now, the thing is with like players who weren't on the 40-day, or 40-man, excuse me, the 40-day, 40-day and 40-night roster, they basically replace someone who's on the 60-day injured list. And if you run out of those 60-day injured list players, you can't, like, add more, you know, minor league guys. But there's not going to be that many, right? Like, there might not be any, like, given, I guess, I don't know, like, if Hansel Robles or something, or Pedro Baez pitching well, they're not really doing that. They haven't really wowed in AAA so far. But like, you could see that sort of scenario. But like, those are the most likely, I think. I guess Bobby Miller qualifies too. If he sort of like bullies his way, like just they're just going to be like, you know what, we're going raw stuff. But he would also be up in September. But in terms of postseason eligibility, you would have to like have 60-day IL guys to sort of supplant as sort of in that regard. But in terms of the current 60-day injured list, so earlier Wednesday, Edwin Rios, he completed his rehab assignment. Tuesday was his 20th day on the rehab assignment. He had played 14 games with AAA at that point, and he had missed like 2.5 months with, or two months with a hamstring tear. So pitchers can go up to 30 days, and if they're recovering from like Tommy John or something, they can usually get an extension. But for position players, it's 20 days maximum. So since he's healthy, like they had to activate him, but there's no room on the position player because everybody's healthy right now. So they optioned him. So he's probably not going to be back up till September 1st. So I guess we'll see with that. But in terms of like other guys, so we mentioned Blake Treinen earlier. I'm trying to pull up the rest, and I don't have it in front of me. Okay. Dustin May this Saturday when he gets called up, he's a 60-day guy, so someone's going to have to get DFA'd, or I guess like, yeah, there's no real other like 10 or 15-day IL people who could get extended unless like it's the worst possible scenario, because if like they determine that Clayton Kershaw is just not going to be ready by like this weekend, which I doubt, then he can go on the 60-day, which essentially ends his season. But that's not going to happen. So I would imagine, you know, you're going to see someone DFA'd, like maybe like Jake Reed or someone who's in the minors right now, but on the 40-man, just as a possibility. So Blake Treinen again, not till mid-September. The others, there's not really a ton. Like Buehler's out for the season. Jimmy Nelson is considered out for the season. Daniel Hudson's out for the season. Danny Duffy's probably not going to play. Kevin Pillar was thought to be out for the season. He's actually been cleared to do baseball activities, and he's been in Arizona. But he's also a long shot, so I doubt they're going to call him up. Tommy Canley, again, that 50-50 prop, is like barely – Victor Gonzalez is only in Class A. So I don't – outside of May and Treinen, I don't think there's any like must-adds. So – It's not as like maybe voluminous as they thought. And again, this was part of that why they traded Clevinger, Mitch White, and Jake Lamb like at the trade deadline to sort of make room to be able to like do this. And maybe they thought they might be adding more, but like they don't necessarily have to cut guys like near the bottom just to do it now. So they really only have like those two for sure. And then outside of that, it's kind of a crapshoot.
All right, final question. I've mentioned roast chicken, and I do think I do a nice job making it, but today's question is about the store-bought version, whether it's from Costco or your local grocery store. Do you ever buy one, and how do you serve it besides as its own dish? It is...
A lot.
Yeah, it's a staple whenever Melissa and I don't have the time to cook, and we are... I wouldn't say we would go out of our way to... there's not a Costco here in Lawrence. When we're in Kansas City, we'll grab one, but... There is a co-op that has really, really good ones, and they'll have like the base one similar to what you would get from a Costco, but then they'll rotate out either pesto or barbecue, and we'll definitely get one of those, usually, and serve it with a salad, and then have leftovers and make stock from the bones. No, it is like, and you get it's what Costco's is $5 or whatever, and the one I get is like $6 or $7, which is an incredible deal. Absolutely worth it.
I would say at most they're like $7 or $8 tops, and like that's at a grocery store or whatever. But yeah, like they'll have the flavors like lemon garlic or you know whatever. Like there's usually a bunch. My thing is I will depending on what I'm doing, like I will usually grab like the breast meat and then like have that with like something, some quick side, like either rice or like some, you know, maybe saute some vegetables or something, and just have that like in a bowl or whatever, and then just keep the rest in there, and then either add it to stuff intermittently over the next day or two, or just grab like the legs or the thighs and then just piece on that or something like as a lunch or whatever. But like, yeah, those are phenomenal, perfect go-tos, like quick when you don't really necessarily have the time, and they're great. I love them. Yep.
Real one quick sort of little note before we sign off for me. For any, I don't know if our episode numbers public to the listening audience. I don't know if they are. They might be like sort of in a URL or something.
I used to have them in the titles. I don't remember if I'm still doing it.
It can be a little confusing because it seems like we've done 2,000 episodes. We've done a lot, but not 2,000.
But
for my sorting purposes, I decided on a scheme where it's the last two digits of the year and then however many we've done that year. So this year it's episode, or this year, this week, it's episode 2222. And something interesting I've noted, if you are a big fan of the number two, you are out of luck on the Dodgers. You don't get two and you're never going to get 22 either. So
it made me
realize.
Perhaps, and also our last episode we honored Vin Scully, but on this one we're still honoring Vin Scully because Deuce is wild. So
it's absolutely wonderful.
What a perfect way to go out. So this is the lineup with True Blue LA. We actually have podcast art, which I will put in the post.
We do?
And share it. Yeah.
Is it a picture of me?
Yep. It's you and I. It's you and I in a police lineup. That would be great. No, it's not usual suspect style. Yeah. But yeah, that's our podcast, the lineup this week. We will talk to you next week after we return.